Welcome to The Business Strategist, the show that gives business owners and entrepreneurs game-changing business strategies that can be used in scaling and transforming a business. Sharing deep dive conversations with industry experts, thought leaders and clients facing real challenges and uphill struggles. Brought to you by business strategist, former elite athlete, international speaker and best-selling author, Adam Strong.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's show with myself, Adam Strong, and really looking forward to today's show, actually. Got an amazing guest who we recently connected with actually on Facebook, and we're part of a similar business group. But, you know, it's very interesting how we are, even though we're in different industries, we share a very similar mindset and share very similar similar experiences, which I'm going to be loving the conversations for today. Anyway, if you're listening to me live, use the hashtag live, use the hashtag replay, of course. So who have we got onto today, ladies and gents? Let me give you a bit of a snapshot. So we've got the amazing Greg Wilkes. Now, Greg is actually originally from the UK, but he's living in Australia. I have no clue why he would go there, but anyway, that's another conversation. So Greg's background is extensively in the construction industry, more specifically. He's a business owner, he's a strategist, he's a property developer. His background actually started off with in the construction industry specifically was around doing loft conversions with him and his business partner, and expanded that business quite extensively and identified huge gaps in his business, got a business advisor, and found that they were working in the business rather than on the business. Who else isn't doing that? Anyway, so basically from his experiences, managed to create a methodology which helps construction-based businesses effectively grow into seven-figure businesses or more. So Greg, welcome to the show.
Adam, awesome to be on. Thank you for that introduction. And I can't believe you just said this was live. I thought you were going to like be able to edit all my ums and ahs and all the rubbish that I talk, but never mind. I'll be on my best behavior now.
Nah, we don't do if we're going to do these things, we just might as well throw people into the deep end. I mean, come on. I mean, it's all good. It's all good. Listen, I'm looking forward to today's show. Tell me about that, because I know that you got into the construction industry at the age of 20, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? Give us a little bit of a snapshot.
Yeah, so brief snapshot. 16, actually, got into construction, worked with my dad as an apprentice. My dad was a bricklayer. And I think most people that get into construction, they either do it because they haven't maybe done very well at school, or they've just fallen into it because their dad or something like that was in the industry. So that's pretty much how it went for me. It wasn't an industry that I necessarily chose, but I did enjoy it. Yeah, we got into it. Started a business around 20 with a business partner, left my dad and done my own thing, and that was great. We sort of grew that rapidly, probably too rapidly, actually. So I talk all about it in my book, how that business scaled so fast that we didn't really have the systems and processes in place as we started to scale it up, and the cracks started to appear. And unfortunately, that business, as we got it to around 5 million, ended up going bust, which was probably one of the worst experiences of my life. So happy to delve into that in more detail. But if you want to talk strategy, you can skip past all that. But I do talk about all that in my book, because it's a painful story, and I think a lot can resonate with it.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. Very good. Love that. Some good stuff, that. Before we get into the show, how did you end up in Australia? Sure, it's got to be for love. Can't be for kangaroos or koala bears. I can tell you that for sure.
Well, it's sun and sea. So interestingly enough, my business career changed a little bit. So carried on with construction, which eventually moved into property development and made, you know, a pretty decent sum in property development in the UK. And then we got to a point in COVID where we just thought, we were stuck at home, and we were always talking about Australia for probably about 10 years. My wife used to love Wanted Down Under, the show. Used to watch it religiously. And in the end, we took the plunge and thought, we'll try for a year, see how it goes. By that point, I was already doing business coaching, which was all on Zoom, which meant I didn't actually need to be in a physical location anymore. And that was it. We moved out here, brought the kids out here, and absolutely loving it. Yeah, been out here for a year and a half now. It's great.
Wow. Fantastic. I still can't understand, actually, why the Aussies call us POMs. Have you worked that out yet?
I think POM stands for Prisoners of Her Majesty.
Yeah, something like that. POM, I don't know exactly. POMs, exactly.
Yeah, and then they don't just call us POMs, they call us whinging POMs. just to come a bit more salt in the wound. But yeah, they're we give them as good as they get. Don't worry about that.
Absolutely, definitely. There's a fierce rivalry, especially in the cricket. Not that I'm a big cricket fan, of course, but hey-ho.
Every sport, yeah.
Every sport, exactly. All right, cool. Love that. So let's get into today's conversation, because you do specifically business coaching for the construction industry. Give us some more details. Let's talk about construction industry, because I think it's such a broad range. Can you just give us a little bit more of a snapshot about the types of businesses that you're working with?
Yeah, sure. So if I just go back a little step. So the reason I got into coaching actually is because after my business failure, which was horribly painful, I actually wanted to prove to myself that I could do it again. So I started up a business doing it the right way, but this time I documented everything that I did. So consumed business book after business book and thought, right, I know I was doing something's right, but I just need to plug the gaps of where things were going wrong. So really worked it again, and within 12 months we breached seven figures really easily. So the second business I created was so much less stressful than the first one, but more importantly, I was giving myself some time, freedom and money, which meant that I could start doing some property developing. So basically I outlined the whole process and spoke to Daniel Priestley. I don't know if he's a mutual connection, but I don't think he is. Yes. So went on one of his courses, and Daniel Priestley is all about getting your story out there and writing a book. So wrote a book about it. And that's when I realized that I really hit upon a niche and a need in the UK, particularly, as there just wasn't much help for construction businesses with coaching and for business development. Lots of obviously generic business coaches, but construction itself, there was so little information on it. So I thought, well, look, I know how to do this. And it is a bit of a unique beast to many other industries. So yeah, went all in on it. And that's how the coaching started for construction. Basically, it's based on the mistakes that I made and then what I got right, and I ended up coming up with a 5-step process on how to grow your business, which has actually really worked time and time again, not only for me but for my members in my PE.
Very cool, love that. So when we think about construction, I guess we're thinking about, as we mentioned, plumbing engineers, we're looking at, I don't know, architects. Who do these include?
Yeah, not architects. Yeah, it'd be plumbers, electricians, builders, bricklayers, all the trades, but those that are actually on the ground in construction. So generally, we help businesses that are around about a million, and we'll scale them to 5 million in the UK, or in Australia, that'd be 10 million Aussie dollars. So that's the sort of area we sit. Once they start getting past the 5-10 million, then they start going beyond my realms of expertise. They probably want to get someone, another coach, because you can't have really coaches.
Absolutely. So that really brings an interesting point, actually, because I, in my previous profession, I used to work with a few people in the construction industry. And I found that, and maybe, I don't know if this is something that you've found, but I found that they have a very interesting mindset. It's that they're very set in their ways. It's like, well, this is like what I was taught, or this is like my dad taught me this, and this is the way that we're going to do things. And do you find that there is an element of resistance or some self-sabotaging habits when it comes to, yeah, they're working in the business, they have these aspirations to grow or to increase revenue or whatever it is. What have you found working with people in this profession, the self-sabotaging habits and their elements of mindset that really holds them back?
Yeah, not so much on self-sabotage, but I think the mindset problems are that a lot of them are coming from being on the tools and being engineers and actually physically doing the work. And the problem is, and I had this problem as well, because, and my dad definitely had this problem, and he didn't want to scale a business. But what he would do on site is he would, if someone was doing something and they were doing it the wrong way, he would basically go, look, let me show you how to do it. And he'd push them out of the way and he'd do it himself because he was probably better than them. And he would just get it done because he was just a grafter. And that really influenced me a little bit on how I started to do things. And I think, oh, look, let me prove to you. It's a bit like an ego thing. Let me show you how it's done. But I see the same pattern repeating with a lot of the clients that initially come to us, that some of them actually struggle to get off the tools because they believe they're the best person to be doing it. But when they make the leap and then they realize, actually, I can't be on the tools anymore, then they have that problem with other aspects of the business. They might think, I can't let go of the accounting. I've got to be the one who raised the invoices, or I've got to do this and I've got to do that because I'm the best person to be doing it. So I think there's definitely mindset issues with letting go and actually allowing other people to do things. And I think that all comes from being a tradesman and you believing that you can do it the best.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but have you found that when, you know, especially people and especially in the industry that I'm working in, the professional services, do you think that that's very high risk? Because if you've got someone that's working on the tools, as you mentioned it, right? And, you know, because they're so into the business, they love what they do, or they're passionate about what they do, or they've been doing it for so long. Do you think that there's an element of risk to the business because it relies on them so much, I guess? But I'd love to have this conversation around risk, low risk, high risk type thing.
Mm. Well, it's not really a business, is it? If it's all reliant on that person, I think there's a huge risk. So I'm always sort of putting out there that you need to get off the tools and grow your business. And sometimes I get a bit of backlash on that because I'll get some people say, well, no, I love being on the tools. I love my craft. And that's fine. You know, if that's what you're happy doing and you love your craft, that's great. But the reality you've got to accept is as you start to get older, it's going to affect your health. Being, you know, a tradesperson, that's definitely a health problem. It's going to affect your wealth because there's only so far you can grow as a business, and in effect, what your personal goals are as you go forward. Can you really reach those bigger long term goals? So there's big risk because for any industry is that if it's all around you, if you go and get yourself injured or anything happens and you can't work anymore, and you've not created any systems or anyone else that can do anything around you, then you know, really, you've just created a job for yourself, not really a business. So that I think, is the risk. And you're risking your long-term future because, you know, is that really your aspiration, that you're just going to be the one-man band, you know, right away until you retire? For a lot of people, absolutely. Probably not.
Yeah. No, it's a really interesting conversation, especially with the people that we work in our industry as well. They're very good at what they do, very highly experienced, got degrees here and whatever it is, loved what they do. But they also is this element, and maybe it's the same for you guys in construction, is that they don't feel they have the necessary education to take things to the next level. You talk about, you know, the fact that you're a business coach in the construction industry. I've got a really interesting one here. Let's talk about mentors, coaches, advisors, and strategists, because I think that each one has a different purpose, right? And the way that we deliver and the way that we... But from your perspective, when does a business need a coach, a strategist, a mentor, an advisor from your perspective?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think they are different roles. But sometimes you do cross over roles, you know, so people that come to us, you might be coaching them and maybe giving them some encouragement about how to do something, but you also might be the strategist and you might be looking at their figures and showing, actually, this is the direction you have to take, and you'll be telling them what they have to do. So I think you do cross over those different areas. But I think where most people need to really think about if they need something is when they're hitting a bit of a roadblock. And they can't get any further, or they're determined that they want to scale and they want to get there faster. And I think what happens in most industries is that you're trained to do your job well. So you might be trained to be a good tradesperson, or in the professional services, you're trained to do that. But you're never taught actually how to run a business. You're just trained to be good at your job. And most people don't know then, well, actually, you know, how do I, or what is the best marketing strategy for me? And what do I need to do with my finances? What other KPIs I should be setting? Things like that. And when you're at that stage and you think, actually, have I really got a plan of how I'm going to do this? Sometimes you're better off bringing in a coach sooner rather than later, because you can just get there a lot faster. But what you generally find happens is most people will only ever seek out a coach when they're in big trouble. That's probably the number one thing. They're, you know, the business is already in major trouble. They think, last minute, I need to get some help. Or they do it when they've basically hit a wall and they've not grown for many, many years.
Yeah.
And they think, right, okay, I'm not doing this on my own now. I'm going backwards. Now I need to seek out some help. But by then, they've wasted a lot of time, unfortunately.
It's so true. So true. Tell me from your perspective, because I see similarities between construction and certainly with a lot of listeners that we have on this podcast, which is professional services. What do you think are, from your perspective, if we look at construction and professional services, what do you think those similarities are? And do you think that there are similar patterns in terms of, you know, in terms of like what holds a business back? I'd just love to know what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, so I teach five ways to grow a business, and I think you can apply each of those five ways to any industry. Mm-hmm. And those five things are, first of all, you have to have a plan of how you're going to get to where you're going to go. And any business, professional services or not, you need to have a plan which includes metrics, KPIs. When is it the right time to hire? How fast am I going to scale? I want to do this without burning me out. So I need to have a plan on how I'm going to get there. So plan's number one. That's industry-wide, any industry. The second thing is you need to know how to attract and find your perfect clients and have a marketing plan that's going to do that. So that's generic, and that anyone needs to do that. Then you need to be able to convert those clients into high ticket customers, high paying clients. You don't want to have clients that are just choosing you because you're the cheapest. So you need to work out a way of presenting your value to clients. Once you've done that, it's then, how do I get my delivery systems right? How can I deliver for this client and my operations and my back office and front end? And then you look at scaling, bringing the right people on board and the right software and systems. So they're the five areas that I generally teach for construction, but that is exactly the same for professional services too.
Yep. No, I'd agree on that, actually. There's some good points there. Some good stuff, that is. When it comes to specifically construction, actually, in any industry, I know, especially with the world that is in the place right now, which is a bit, little bit messy, to say the least, real estate, property, construction goes up and down, Greg. And if someone's listening in and their industry might be going through a little bit of some hardship, whether it be economy that's influencing it or whatever it is, and you're coaching a client, for example, and they've got these fears or they've got these worries and anxieties around, you know, what's potentially going to happen or not going to happen to them. What are the questions that you ask them, and how do you deal with that?
Yeah, great question. I think the first thing is, don't watch the news. If you're the sort of person that gets influenced, then your emotions can be negatively influenced by the news, because, interestingly enough, you'll see some people in recessions or when things tighten up, which actually has happened in the UK, you know, at the moment.
Yeah.
You'll see some people that really shrink back and they're fearful and they don't progress their business forward. And then you'll get others, some of our members particularly, are absolutely crushing it because they've prepared for this and they're cleaning up now in when things tighten up. And so some of the ways that people do that, and this is what I guess this is what I'd be really diving into with someone if they're worried about this, is looking for the opportunities that a recession potentially brings or a tightening up of the economy brings. And for construction, there's so many opportunities, because one of the biggest problems in construction is that you can't find decent tradespeople. There's a massive lack of skilled labor, probably the same in professional services, I would imagine. And if you've got this problem with skilled labor and you can't find anyone, well, what you're looking for is for your rivals to start running out of work so that you can start poaching some of the best talent that's out there and some of the best tradespeople. So we found that some of our members who actually, during this period that's tightened up, they've actually expanded massively. They're securing huge projects because they've attracted the right type of client that isn't affected by this sort of economic condition. And then they're getting the trades that can deliver the work. So I think sometimes looking at the economy going up and down, I view it as an opportunity. You do have to be shrewd about it, though. At the same time, you don't want to go gung-ho and overspend and things like that. You do have to tighten up. But
yeah,
there are opportunities, not something to be feared.
Yep, I agree. Definitely.
Very cool. Like that. Interesting enough, I know when we were speaking offline, you talked about two words which intrigued me. And it was pattern interrupt. And I was like, "Ooh, pattern interrupt. I kind of like fancy words like that." Talk to me a little bit about pattern interrupt. What is pattern interrupt? What do you use it for? How does it get applied in business? Talk to me about pattern interrupt.
Yeah, sure. So as with most strategies, you learn these from other people sometimes, and then you test them and tweak them and adapt them. And this is actually a strategy. I'm not going to take full credit for this strategy, because this was something that I was taught by a friend of mine called Tyron Giuliani. And one thing he was talking about was when you are sending LinkedIn messages out. So this all is from attracting your ideal client on LinkedIn. The problem is on LinkedIn, it could be any service actually, LinkedIn, Facebook Messenger, Instagram. When you're sending cold outreach messages, the reality is no one is just reading that generic message. It's boring, and they see hundreds of them coming to their inbox every day, and it's just not going to penetrate through. So what we've tested and what really works, and the phrase that Tyron used, was this pattern interrupt. What we need to do at this point is interrupt their thinking pattern. And the way we've tested that really works for this is when we're trying to get in front of maybe an architect or someone like that, because that's what we'd be marketing to most times, rather than sending them just a generic message, what we would potentially be doing is following them for a while on their LinkedIn account or their social media. And we would take a screenshot of either their website or their logo or one of their recent posts that they've recently put out. And then we would be sending them that message first of all, and we would say something about it. So the picture goes out. Love this post that you've just put out last week. Really agree with these comments. And then we would start what we call the sell by chat process of trying to then move them into a conversation. This has a so much higher conversion rate than just, oh, can we connect? I'm a builder and I'm looking for a tender. So that's the pattern interrupt. Pretty simple strategy. A little bit of labor behind it. You need someone in your admin team just to do it and keep track of what you're actually doing. But it really does work. It's a great little strategy just to penetrate the noise.
When you say penetrate the noise, is there something specific that that he teaches as part of that? Like in terms of like what you should say during that particular message that hooks them in? Because eventually you're trying to create a hook, aren't you?
Yeah, so he did teach some stuff, but what really works for us is that we are very specific about who we're targeting on LinkedIn. So and you'll have to try and relate this to professional services, but for us, if we already know what projects they're currently working on, if we wanted to tender for those specific projects, so we get data off the planning portal and there's special apps that you can scrape that data from, and we would then be targeting them on that specific project. So we'd send them the pattern interrupt message. We'd also be sending them a message saying the title, just want to talk to you about 123 Smith Street. And all of a sudden they know that actually this is very specific now. You've got my attention. What is this about? So that's what we teach. How you relate that to your professional services, you're probably better at.
You know what? Something that I wrote down on my piece of paper here that I think is going to absolutely crack you up. So maybe around, I don't know, even when I was younger, you know, we had yellow pages, we had flyers coming through the letterbox and stuff like that, you know, whether it be cutting your lawn or whatever it might be, Greg, okay? Do you think, whether it be professional services or construction, do you think there's still a market for the old school methods of advertising and marketing? Or do you feel like it's just no focus on LinkedIn or focus on Facebook ads or whatever it is? You know, I'm just kind of, again, I'd love to get your opinion about this, because no one's doing this. And I just thought, well, maybe there's a reason that they're not doing it. But I still see people in construction doing it.
I missed the first part of your question because it cut off. I don't know if it was my end, but I think your question was, do old school methods still work? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Yes.
So, 100%. I think old school methods do work. I do favour newer methods, because I think it cuts out some of the legwork. But some of the old school methods, like for example, old school methods for construction will be like flies through the doors, things like that. So if you're working on a neighbor's property and then you fly up the street, that works. You know, you're there. Your van sign written, signboards outside projects. Networking is such an old school method, but so powerful. You just come onto my podcast earlier and dropped to, you know, the wisdom of people buy from people. That's so true. So, yeah, without a doubt, I think you need to mix in old school methods and new. And if you don't, I think if you just rely completely on just the LinkedIn and the Facebook ads and things like that, I think you're really missing a trick.
Yeah, it's just interesting. The only reason I ask that question is I know that certainly in professional services where you might get your law firm and they still advertise in the local newspaper, right? Or do you know what I mean? Like, or they might still be big in Yellow Pages. Do the Yellow Pages actually still exist? I don't know, but maybe they do. I don't know. I just found that kind of fascinating. But what you're saying is, try to balance the whole kind of like old school, new school methods. But sometimes it's very difficult to measure metrics when it comes to old school methods, isn't it?
It isn't. I mean, like, for example, one old school method that some still use is sending out letters to clients. So they might, if they know that a project's gone in for planning permission, they'll send a letter. And I'm not a massive fan of that, but it does yield some results. But then you're weighing up the metrics on that. So very easy way to measure the metrics on that is when you're sending it out, you either give a different phone number or you're going to put a special link out that you can measure the metrics on. So it'll have a unique URL. And when people click that to get in touch with you, you know that that's come from that specific method. So you can measure it, but you just need to be a little bit smarter about how you're going to do that.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. When it comes to strategy, because obviously, you know, you do a little bit of strategy work with some of your clients that are looking to grow. How do you make sure that it's kind of not only on point, but because the industry is very much changing all the time, you know, certain trends are coming in, whether it be there's certain things that's affecting the economy. How do you make sure that someone's strategy, more specifically the planning stage, what you described in step one of your thing, how do you make sure it's like up to date and it serves as more of an adaptable kind of, I suppose, an adaptable active working blueprint, if you like, for a business? Any thoughts about that?
People that can tell you whether it's working or not because they've tried it, tested it, and they'll feed it back. So that's really powerful. But oftentimes the strategy, the business owner normally knows what direction they want to go in anyway. So when we're working out what they want to achieve, it's just diving a little bit deeper and working out what, you know, why do you want to achieve that? What are you really looking to achieve? Is it, you know, I know you want to grow this business, but actually the business owner might say, I want to grow this business because I want to take a day off. And I think I can only do that if I grow a bit bigger. So actually they're looking for time. And then that's a different strategy to growing a business. So it's working out what the person wants. Sometimes it's not growth at all. They don't want any growth and they think they do. And it's not, that's not actually the answer. So the strategy will depend on, you know, what the end outcome is really. It's pretty straightforward. I think most business owners deep down know where the strategy lies and what's working for them. And if nothing's working, then we sometimes just need to dive into why not, you know, what's potentially gone wrong with that. Why did it work before and why has it stopped? Because you wouldn't have been following that strategy if it wasn't working at one point. So yeah, that's what it's, you know, it's just
definitely
adapting, really.
Very cool. Social media. Have to ask you about this. Social media. Go deep or go wide? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, good point. I'll just speak for myself. I go wide. That's been my strategy. So I'm everywhere and I use VAs to get it everywhere. And there's tools that can get it everywhere now. You know, there's very easy to write a specific blog or something and put it, you know, out everywhere and do one bit of content and shrink it down into 20 bits of content. So I like being everywhere and I find it's just interesting where we get clients up from. You know, some channels we're not paying any attention to and all of a sudden someone comes in from it. Interesting enough, the biggest lead source for us, which we were really surprised at, is the podcast for us, which is fascinating, really. So we spend a fair bit on Facebook ads and all different bits of bobs. Most people come through and they say the podcast. Now, the difficult thing is with that is to measure the return on investment on that is quite hard, because sometimes they're coming in via a Facebook ad and then they're promoting the podcast through our email methods or something like that. So I do think go wide, but it does become a little bit more difficult to actually work out where your return on investment is if you go wide, because people will say they've come from one lead source, but actually they could have heard from you from somewhere completely different and they haven't realized.
Yep, that makes a good point. That, love that. Some good stuff. And I feel like the whole kind of go wide or go deep is it also depends as you as a person. You know, it's not kind of right or wrong. You know what I mean? It's like it all depends on you as a person. And if you want to go wide or you want to go, it's no right or wrong answer. That's kind of my thoughts behind it.
No, there's not. No, 100%. If you're going to go, you know, deep on a specific thing, I know people that are hugely successful only being on LinkedIn or only being on Facebook. But some people make the mistake and they say, like, you know, my client is only on LinkedIn, so I have to be on LinkedIn. But that's not always the case. You know, sometimes clients might use LinkedIn for the business side, but they're actually browsing on Facebook or they're browsing on Instagram and they're actually there in the evening potentially. So, you know, it's working out, you know, where that client is and where they're potentially going to connect with you. And yeah, I don't think there is a right or wrong. You've just got to pick the strategy that works for you.
Yeah, good point. Interestingly enough, as we were talking before around the whole kind of grow and scale thing, what are some of the questions that you ask, you know, potential clients to assess if they are in growth stage or in scaling stage, you know, and what is right for them? Because you specifically focus on growing a business more specifically, don't you? So how do you kind of evaluate if someone is growing or if they need scaling? Any thoughts?
Yeah, so most people that come to us are growing. You know, they're at that million mark and they're, you know, looking to get to, say, 5. So, you know, they're growing. But as they then start progressing up the ranks of, you know, 3, 4, 5 million, then we have to start looking at systems to really scale this. So now how do we get the SOPs in place that's going to help you scale this business? What's the training plan like for the staff that you're bringing on board and the company culture? And so the conversation changes if they want to push past the next level. And I actually believe that ceiling for construction is around about the 5 million mark. I think you can grow quite a nice lifestyle business up to that point. But once you start hitting around £5 million or 10 million Aussie dollars, you then need to start thinking of changing the strategy slightly, because the growth strategy isn't going to work as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. Interestingly enough, I came across an interesting article that I read the other day, which was all about combining growth and scale methods and combining them together. I don't know if you've ever come across that. And I was like, well, this is really powerful. Kind of rather than separating the two individually, why not kind of double up and do both at the same time? And it's interesting how businesses can just kind of like just fly in such a short period of time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think there's definitely some merit in doing that. Like, just take for an example, let's talk about the SOPs. So you might look at SOPs in a business and think, well, that's really for a business that's scaling. But, you know, a business owner at 500K or a million, he could still put an SOP in place to hand off some of the tasks that he doesn't want to do to his VA or his bookkeeper or something like that. So although you might not do it to the same level, you can still implement some of the scale strategies for sure. But I suppose what you don't want to do, though, is, and I think a lot of us can make this mistake, is we can look at businesses that are scaling and you look at their strategies and we think, oh, I'm gonna do that. That's going to work for me. But that might not be the right thing for your particular phase of business. And, you know, I make that mistake myself. You know, I look at coaches that are doing, you know, multi millions a month in revenue. And I think, oh, man, they've got like 1 million followers and let me copy what they're doing. But they're in a completely different phase. So that's not the right strategy for me to copy them. But we do look to them, which is hard.
Absolutely. You've got a business under 7 figures and you probably have these conversations and whatever it is. In fact, a business under £3 million, 6 million Aussie, 3 things that business owners should focus on.
I think that the first thing is making sure that you can identify who your ideal client is and finding and attracting that higher ticket client. I think most businesses that try to scale with small ticket find it difficult. Now, there are exceptions to the rule there. I did an interview with Charlie Mullins, the owner of Pimlico Plumbing, who sold his plumbing business for £145 million and predominantly was doing £90 an hour call outs. So you think of the volume that that must have generated. But that is an outlier, crazy, if you like. It really is an outlier. So most businesses, if you want to scale and you're under 3 million, first of all, look at the type of projects you're bringing in, because it's so much easier if you can find higher value clients. And this is why we were talking about earlier, some members in our community that managed to breeze through the recession is because they were landing million-pound projects, which were taking them through this easily. You know, they're absolutely stacked and breezing through it. By the time they finish the million-pound project, they're on the other side and booking in a load more work. So that's number one, find those high-ticket clients. The second thing I would say is when you found those high-ticket clients, you have to know your value proposition to be able to convert those. And it really comes down to your proposals. And one thing we teach is having a unique proposal. You might have a USP for your business, which, you know, you might have a generic 3-point USP that works for you. But try and tie your USP into your client's actual problems, that specific client. So as an example, you may be looking at a client and they say to you, as you're interviewing them, they say to you, I really have to get this job done in 9 months, Greg, because my wife's pregnant and it just has to be finished by that point. Now, if you just go and send them your quote with your generic USP, you haven't actually solved their problem. Whereas if you developed a USP around time and said, here's our quote, and let me just tell you about our USP, which is we finish 95% of our projects on time because we do this, we do this, and we do this, and you've really thought about it and have got a detailed answer. Well, that client's buying off you because they perceive the value in you. It doesn't matter if you're more expensive, they're going to want you over everyone else. And I think people miss that. You know, they really focus on USPs, but they don't really think about, can I do an individual USP for a client? And you might be listening to that and think, oh, well, that's a lot of work. Like, you know, how are you going to have an individual USP for every client? But you can often find you could put them into buckets, and most clients will all have the same problems. And you'll have, the end, it will only be about five or six generic USPs that you will have, and you just slot them in to your presentations. Makes a huge difference if you can use that psychology in selling. So that's the second point there on conversion. And then the third thing I think businesses really need to focus on is always looking ahead when they're hiring, because if you're trying to scale, you've constantly got to find and attract top talent that's going to come into your business, whether that be back office staff or in construction too, the tradespeople. And you need to view finding talent like having a sales funnel. It's got to be wide, and you've got to have loads of leads that are coming into it. And you need a strategy. How do I get these leads in? Where am I going to find them from? Not just putting an advert out when you're desperately in need of someone. And if you can have a bank and a database of talent that you can potentially call on, then you can filter them through that funnel and find them. So, yeah, they're the big three that I focus on. There's so much more to it, but that's probably the big ones.
Yep, love it. Some good stuff, that. Some good stuff. So we're coming towards the end, and this has been great. I mean, I've been writing quite a lot of notes here just from our conversation, so thank you very much for that. I'd love to know what you're working on right now, if there's anything that that you want to share with the listeners, what you're working on right now, and what's the next big project, my friend?
Yeah, great question. So yeah, for me personally, it's property development over here in Sydney. So one thing we do with our members actually is builders want to have the same journey. So they want to create a successful building company, but then they want to get into development. So we show them how to do that process. And we've had loads of clients that have managed to do it, which is fantastic. But I want to do the same over here in Sydney. So just got over here, found funders. We're now looking at appraising sites. So that's my personal goal, to build a property portfolio here. But for the coaching side of the business, what we're looking to do is add more and more support services to help them. So we've just added a QS quantity surveyor coach into the group. We've got a chartered accountant coach in the group. We're trying to bring all the professional services into the coaching community so that we've got a complete one-stop shop. If you need any professional advice, any help to grow your business, we've also got software solutions in there too, CRM systems, project management suites. It's all there. And we've got plans to get health and safety in and all sorts of other bits and bobs. So yeah, big plans for this business going forward. And then we want to launch in the US eventually. So that's the plan for me. But what I haven't got, Adam, which you spoke about, is I haven't got the exit plan sorted yet. I know where I'm going over the next few years, but I haven't got that exit strategy sorted. I just want to keep going for now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's food for thought.
Yeah,
it is. So I'm glad that. I'm glad I triggered something. Anyway, all good. Listen, guys, hope you've enjoyed today's episode with myself and Greg, of course. Lots of great value bombs that Greg has dropped. Hopefully, it might have triggered something in your mind. It might highlight something that you need to address in your business, and it might give you some solutions and some epiphanies just from our conversation. Anyway, Greg, just want to say thanks very much for being on today's show. Really appreciate you, man.
No problem at all, Adam. And can I just end with one last thing, just a quick plug. If anyone knows construction professionals that want to come to an event, we're hosting an event in June in London, Manchester and Edinburgh. And if you know of any construction builders or whatever trades that would be interested in growing a 1 to 5 million business, then I can send Adam the links to that if he's putting it in the show notes. And more than welcome to come along or drop onto my website, Develop Coaching.
Absolutely. Well, guys, we'll make sure we put the links to Greg's events below. So make sure you check those out. Definitely worthwhile listening to someone who's got extensive experience in this industry. And I know that you're going to learn so much more. So, Greg, thanks very much again. And guys, hope you enjoyed today's show. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to The Business Strategist with Adam Strong. Follow Adam on LinkedIn, YouTube, and adamstrong.net. Leave a review on Apple or Spotify.